Welcome to the Big Biz Show, featuring insight, analysis, and a lot of stuff that's none of your business.
Hold on. This is the Big Biz Show. I think it is their business.
Making the markets work for you. Here's the man with the plan, Sully.
Hit it. Live from the Loft 100 studios in sunny San Diego, California. Big Biz Show's on the air. Great to have you along. 110 million TV homes strong. 150 radio stations. We're in 175 countries. Great to have you. Mike Costa's here.
How you doing, brother?
And of course, the day trader Quattro. Let's give it him a hand. Lots of stuff going on. Looks like we're going to have, you know, there's a couple of terms I hate nowadays. Pivot. Let's pivot.
Yeah, okay? it's
course correct.
Yeah.
I'll cut you. Don't use course correct in my presence. There's this fight going on between the Fed. Again, I got to bring up a great short read that talks about what a scam the Fed is. And I'm no conspiracy theorist here as I play the Twin Peaks theme. Pulled that one out, didn't I?
That is pretty,
that's pretty
smooth.
Good. There you go, man. Creature from Jekyll Island would be the name of the book that you should read. Take you 45 minutes. Talks about how nobody knows. Well, first of all, the Fed isn't a federal organization. They're just run by or overseen by Congress.
Yeah.
Nobody knows who owns the Fed.
Right.
It's suspected that the banks that use the Fed own the Fed, but nobody knows what percentages. It was put together by Roosevelt, Carnegie, and some of the other
Rockefellers.
Rockefellers.
Yeah.
They all got together on Jekyll Island one weekend and created the Fed. So the reason I bring that up, though, is the Fed is now tasked with a few things. You go right on their website. If you go to FedReserve.com or .org, you can, you know, they're tasked with keeping interest rates low, employment at a maximum, and prices stable. Okay. And the problem they're having now is, even though we're having lower interest rate increases, okay, in other words, soft landing, things don't suck as bad.
Right.
We're having 75 percentage points, basis points.
Yeah.
They're having
0.25
percentage points. Okay. And the reason is, so why are we still raising interest rates if things are getting better? Because we keep hiring. Now, why would that matter? Why would that matter? Because if you're hiring, people have more money to spend.
True.
If people have more money to spend, okay, there's going to be a supply chain issue. Prices are going to go which way when there's a supply chain issue, right? So you keep on raising interest rates until businesses don't employ anymore. So there's a correlation between unemployment rates and interest rates. There's a balance, okay? But that's the issue here. And the other balance is, you know, 70% of our economy, 70% of our GDP, the report card to our economy, gross domestic product, is based on consumer spending. Now, when you flood an economy with too much stimulus, and you can see charts going back to the beginning of the 1900s, every time we pump money in the system, interest rates fall up. All right, enough of that. I have got an email into the studio, as we do so often, into our executive producer's office, saying we got to talk to this company called Heart Sciences. And Heart Sciences is bridging what they call a diagnostic gap in cardiac care by figuring out early detection.
Huge. Okay?
Now, I don't know if I got an Apple Watch, and I hate to say the only reason I got an Apple Watch is so I can count my steps, because, you know, who needs a watch? Wife.
Right.
That'll tell you what time it is. And if you're late,
oh boy!
But the bottom line is the technology now is, if you can check your watch for AFib.
I do it all the time.
Do you really?
Absolutely.
Is it wrong that the left side is numb all the time, Mike? Have you, does it have a thing on that for you? Maybe have a salad. So anyway, Andrew
it's just
Simpson.
A tick.
So we got an email about Andrew Simpson. Andrew Simpson is the CEO of a company called Heart Sciences. They are publicly traded under the stock symbol HSCS. HeartSciences.com. He joins us now via Zoom. Andrew, thank you for being so generous with your time and coming on with us today, because you hear the word cardiac and everybody steps to attention here. And it's when you start talking about early detection, boy, you got my attention, that's for sure. So talk about that a little bit. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Sully. I appreciate being here. So what we're essentially doing is changing what's possible with an ECG. So the ECG's been around about 100 years, but it has significant limitations in the types of heart disease that it can detect. Okay. So what we're doing is we're applying advanced science and artificial intelligence to basically make it detect cardiac dysfunction at an early stage. And the reason why that's important is, you know, most people, everybody's heard, you will have heard of somebody that's had a heart attack unexpectedly or even died from a heart attack unexpectedly. And that's essentially because there isn't a test for a frontline physician to be able to effectively work out whether you've got heart disease. So the ECG is low cost. It's easy to perform. You don't need expensive imaging tests or a cardiologist. So it's the perfect test. It just needs to be broader and be able to do more. And that's what we're about.
Whenever you can. I think, you know, as I'm looking at your notes here, you know, there is no, as you mentioned, low cost frontline medical device that can screen for heart disease. I can get a cardia that tells me if I'm in sinus rhythm or not. I can look at my watch, none of which can tell you if you had a heart attack or on the way to a heart attack. And I think that's a really interesting designation because I think those, I mean, that's the off-ramp to what we really need to know, right? I mean, it's that last inch solution that we're missing here. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, if you think about the conventional ECG, which would include the cardia or the Apple Watch, the signal or the trace that you see is a time and voltage signal. I mean, that's a digital, that's an oscilloscope. Just think where has a digital signal been the state of advanced technology for decades now?
It was in that China balloon, I think, that was using 17, it was using 17, the technology from the 1700s, if I'm not mistaken, was when the balloon was invented. No, I think I get your point. There's nothing new to see here, right?
No, exactly. So it'll tell you if you've got a rhythm issue, like AFib, you know, perfect for telling you if you've got a rhythm issue, but it won't identify whether you've got other diseases that are impacting your cardiac function, the function of your heart. So guess what? With the electrical signal, there's a lot more information to bring to bear. That's what we do. And suddenly you're able to make the ECG way more valuable in that it can identify whether you've got heart disease at an early stage. And look, this, the field that we're talking about, which is making the ECG do more, it is indisputable now that this is going to be a major, major revolution because of research that's going on. And, you know, we had a publication that was put out and they basically said the field that we're talking about of making an ECG do more is the most important advances in electrocardiography since its inception. And given it's been around 100 years, that's a pretty big statement. We're in extra innings.
Here's my question for you, Andrew. First of all, that's a good-looking P-wave you got there showing on your see how much I know about this stuff? If you don't have a P-wave, that's why your left arm's numb, Mike, most of the time. Maybe you should see somebody about that.
Okay.
Silent killer, as it's well known, as you're talking about. Is more deadly, and get this, this is going to knock your socks off, because I didn't know this, more deadly than all cancers combined. Right? Am I accurate in saying that?
And the biggest spend in healthcare around the world and the U.S.
So talk about, for your company, what's the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow? I mean, what, you know, for, in terms of patient care, in terms of what we can expect as consumers or patients, and what you guys expect as a company, because you guys have a technology that's proprietary that's solving this issue. And once again, the name of the company is Heart Sciences. They are publicly traded under the stock symbol HSCS. One of your shareholders told us to talk to you. I'm sure glad we did, because we want to have you back and talk about it. But talk about what you're looking forward to most here in 2023 in regards to the patient side as well as your technology.
Yeah, so we're at the moment where we've not yet received FDA clearance. We're in the late stages of a resubmission for what's called a de novo clearance, which basically means you're a new type of technology. So when I say we're doing something new, the FDA agrees with that. So we would expect to be resubmitting for that FDA submission in the next few months. That would put us on a pathway. You know, the FDA is usually kind of 6 to 9 months for an approval process. But then this would be available for use by physicians on patients.
Sure.
And, you know, it's a low cost test. It's an ECG. It's of similar cost to an ECG, but it means that your frontline physician, instead of, you know, not being able to screen you for your heart disease, would be able to tell whether you've got cardiac dysfunction and even pick that up at an early stage. And look, the challenge in the health system isn't in cardiology. Cardiologists have got all the imaging tests in the world. They've got fantastic equipment that can tell you whether you've got heart disease. The problem is the referral process, because most people in the United States find out they've got heart disease by having an event. Well, guess what? A heart attack's not a good way to find out you've got heart disease.
Yeah.
And most people being referred to cardiology turn out to have a negative test. So think of the tens of billions of dollars that's costing the health system.
Andrew, I want you back on the air with us in the weeks to come here, because one thing we didn't have a chance to talk to, because we're short on time, is the COVID-19 pandemic has increased the risk of all this stuff. That's something we didn't get to talk about. Listen, you need to come back on air with us as soon as possible. Maybe get to San Diego. His name is Andrew Simpson, of course. Name of the company, Heart Sciences. HSCS is their stock symbol. Go to heartsciences.com. Mike, go there today.
Yes.
Down that double-double.
No more chili dogs.
Maybe have the watermelon salad.
Yes.
See you in a minute. Hey there, live from the Loft 100 Studios in sunny San Diego, California. Big Biz Show's on the air. Great to have you along today. Sully here, Costa there.
Hello.
The day trader Quattro in studio. Our studio audience, no, not today.
Soon.
It's one. Great to have you along today. Nationwide, coast to coast, 110 million broadcast television homes, 150 radio stations in 175 countries. Thanks to Biz TV, Biz Talk Radio Network, American Forces Radio Network, iHeartRadio, and the rest of you. Love our big group shows on the air. Let's get to it. Boom, just like that.
Boom.
Like that, don't you? Boom. Phil Oldridge is becoming a friend and a mentor to all of us because of what he is doing there as a CEO of Envirotech Vehicles. They are publicly traded under the stock symbol EVTV. Heavy duty electric vehicles. But we're talking about commercial vehicles here. We're talking about buses. We're talking about delivery vehicles. We're talking about vans. And this company has evolved a ton since the beginning of 2022. And I'm just gonna let him take it from there, because there's been a lot of exciting stuff. Look no further than their press releases to see what's going on. Phil, great to see you, pal. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. Good afternoon. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. Let's talk about the latest, because you are tearing down walls that you said you were going to tear down at the beginning of when we first started talking to you about a month ago. And things are really happening for the company. I'm just gonna let you take it away and give us an update.
Well, great. Well, I'm calling you today. If my background looks a little weird, I'm in a car.
That's good. He's in one of his vehicles. See, that's why it's so silent in there, because it's an EV. Continue, sir. It's
all good. So I'm actually in Mexico right now, if you could imagine, and I'm meeting with a group of people over here. I've been meeting with them in the last week, and we're very excited because, you know, the president of Mexico signed an executive order right before Christmas there that mandated that all vehicles in Mexico be EV by 2040.
Wow.
And there's a few exceptions on a couple, but it's a massive, massive undertaking. And so we got invited by a couple of one specific governor. I can't share with you who it is at this time, but shortly we'll be able to. And we got invited down, and we've been at the table, and we've been going at things here now for a little while. And so they're looking to us to help them launch and get some manufacturing off the ground on the EV side. So we're very excited about that. And it's just tremendous.
Phil,
what
kind of vehicles are we talking about here? Are we talking about the school bus side? Are we talking about prisoner transport? Are we talking about commercials, just general commercial? What do you think? Can you share?
Yeah, yes, 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 and yes on all of the above. So everything that that moves, and we haven't had a chance to share with you guys yet, but we will soon. We've at EVT, on the commercial side, now has electric forklifts. Wow. And electric sweepers. But what's very exciting is we've just announced a product that we've delivered into Europe, and we'll be unveiling it here next month in the U.S., and it's called the EVT Zipper. And it's a small little vehicle that is a multifunctional vehicle. We just finished homologation on it. It serves in both right-hand and left-hand drives, and it's a small little delivery vehicle that you can use for parcel pickup, delivery service, mail stuff, frozen foods, fast food service, something that you would use to run around in the city, hence the name, the EVT Zipper.
Mike needs his own. If it's fast food service, just...
Yeah, I heard fast food. My ears perked up.
Hey, I got a question. You and I have talked about this off the air before, but I think it's time to actually spend a little bit of time on it, and that's your all-electric bus. That is a big product. And you don't see that every day. You see natural gas buses. I don't know that we've seen many all-electric buses. Talk about the all-electric bus going on over there.
Yeah, so super exciting. Our first one that we're unveiling is our school bus, and it'll also be coming out here in the next we were hoping to have it done right now, but there's a few tweaks we're just finishing into it. It's called the EVT Bumblebee. It's a school bus, so hence the yellow and black, so hence the name Bumblebee. Super excited. It's an 84-passenger school bus, all electric.
My goodness.
Tremendous traction on that bus. We're very, very excited about that.
If you talk about zero emissions, is it the zero emissions that they're seeking in places like Mexico, or is it just the convenience because of gas prices? I mean, there's a profitability function here as well. I mean, look, you know, there's an argument about EVs about the carbon footprint being equal because of the charging stations that are fueled with coal. But at the same time, you got to take the economic thing into consideration, Philip. There's got to be more than just the environment they're looking at. They got to be looking at bottom lines too, because this might be cheaper overall at the end of the day. Correct?
Absolutely. Well, you know, if you take a look at the charging infrastructure, and they say that, you know, charging stations that are, you know, fueled with coal, well, they're fueled with coal, and they've been doing that for years anyway. So the whole grid runs that way. So
right. You're
not increasing the grid. So that argument doesn't carry any water with me. But, you know, down here, like, you look at cities like Mexico City, and it's a massive problem. NOx gas is very, very unhealthy. And it's caused, you know, it's particulates that come from, you know, from diesel emissions and diesel fuel. So, yeah, they're looking at that. And it's not just the you know, the
environmental
vehicle emissions. Yeah, it's
not
just the
money, though. It's a savings, though. That's got to be a piece of this, correct?
Well, the maintenance savings is massive. Noise pollution is massive. People forget about noise pollution. And here's the other thing you don't realize. You take a city, like Los Angeles, or you take a huge city, you know, any big city in North America and down in Mexico and stuff like that. And during the peak days, when you're running around with all of these vehicles and you're trapping all this NOx gas inside the city, by the early afternoon, it creates a layer of smog over the city. Now, that smog doesn't allow those gases to trap. So what happens is doesn't allow those gases to escape. So what happens is the core temperature of the city rises.
Wow.
And you can take a city and raise the core temperature in a city by as much as 2 degrees. So that 2 degrees raise in temperature causes massive, massive consumption of power, because AC systems are cycling, you know, all sorts of stuff starts to go in. Wind, you know, as soon as the temperature picks up in the city, the wind rises in the city. When wind rises in the city, more dust pollution,
sure,
air pollution, all sorts of stuff happens. AC systems kick into high and overload. So if you can reduce the temperature in the city by getting rid of its NOx gases, not just is it good for the people, mm-hmm, but you lower the core temperature in the city, you actually lower the overall cost of the grid itself.
Sure.
You're dropping all sorts of savings there.
Hey,
and maintenance savings and stuff are huge.
Philip, by the way, Phil Aldridge is his name, CEO of EnviroTech Vehicles. They are publicly traded under the stock symbol EVTV. You can go to EVTVUSA.com. Before we get out of here, I know that you serve sort of the last mile solution, you know, in commercial vehicles. Any designs in the future of going into personal vehicles or even you know, fast food vehicles for Mike? Is there any wisdom to get out of the lane that you're currently in?
The pizza zipper.
Well, the pizza zipper is coming, and so, but it still falls under the commercial side for us, and
yeah.
So I'd love to tell you that we're looking at other things, but the truth of the matter is that, you know, we are focused on the commercial side of things, and that's the lane we know. That's the lane we understand. We've invested millions of dollars into that side of it. And so it wouldn't serve our shareholders well,
sure,
if we decide to switch midfield. So we're going to stick with what we're at. It's time to, you know, start getting shareholder, you know, equity back into the company and see our stock moving, and it's starting to move now. Things are starting to go along. So mm-hmm, we're going to stick with what we've got. We're starting to get recognized. People are starting to know us for that. So commercial is where we're going to be.
Well, that was, by the way, that was from Brian Mello out of Opelika, Alabama, and another question from Jackson, Tennessee, that was emailed to the show. And you know what? You're answering the question. We're going to stay in our lane. No pun intended. Thank you, Phil. Good luck in Mexico. I'll talk to you soon, pal. We'll talk to you next week. His name, Phil Aldridge. EVTV is their stock symbol, EnviroTech Vehicles. Much more Big Biz coming up.
Research efforts to discover new antibiotics have stalled. In the post-World War II period following Alexander Fleming's breakthrough discovery of penicillin, new antibiotics were discovered and developed at a breathtaking pace. The golden age of antibiotic discovery peaked in the 1950s, and during this period, the pharmaceutical industry was the engine of innovation. But then, discoveries started dropping drastically from the 1980s onward, with no new antibiotic being produced in nearly three decades. Government, industry, and medical communities all agree that in the face of this mounting crisis, efforts to revive and improve the likelihood of successful drug discovery is essential. Enter Acurx Pharmaceuticals. They are a biopharmaceutical company focused on developing new antibiotics for difficult-to-treat infections such as MRSA, VRE, and DRSP. We face new threats every day, big and small. Acurx Pharma is on the front lines of health using technology to help us treat tomorrow's infections today. Acurx Pharmaceuticals.
Badfinger for you on Apple Records. And Mike Costa, I will think you'll agree, is the Badfinger of this show.
Thank you.
You know why you're a Badfinger? Because you wear a pinky ring, and that's the Badfinger. Anybody with a pinky ring. Excuse my audience, has a pinky ring.
Dang.
We were talking about, before the show, before the break.
Yep.
I said, hey guys, you step into my office.
Ooh.
And automatically you think, something's bad, right?
The whole studio went cold.
Right. Right. Right?
Yeah.
Nice.
Or here's another example. You're driving on the freeway. Woo! Do I have sirens? I got sirens here somewhere. Here. And you're like, and everybody's had that feeling, right?
Yeah.
Right behind you?
Right.
It's an ambulance.
Oh.
See how your patterns are faster than your thoughts?
Big time.
I don't know why I'm teaching that lesson today. I know why, because I told the band I want to meet at 3:45. You just step in my office. They automatically think something bad.
Yeah, they all started looking at each other.
It's good. It's a fantastic thing. We're going to have four less people in the band. It's going to be awesome. Now, why would it be your four? I just demonstrated it a second time. I'm going to do a little seminar, a little book and tape series. You can buy them in the back.
Boom, there it is.
You like that? All right. Hey, Stephen Cross Cree is the CEO of a company called Danimer Scientific. First of all, welcome back to our 110 million broadcast homes that we're in every single weeknight in 150 radio stations now in 175 countries on American Forces Radio Network. It's great to have you guys on. I want you to think about something. Have you ever heard these words? Three words. Biodegradable plastic products. Yeah. I've never even heard of it. Well, plastic products, don't they last until,
Yeah, they'll outlive a nuclear war.
I have I got called on by the association. You know, the guy with the clipboard and the golf cart. It's flashlight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's a middle manager during his daytime job, but at night he is the boss. Hitting golf balls off of the backyard into the canyon.
Right.
Well, yeah, that's an environmental problem, right? Not if they're biodegradable golf balls.
Hey, thank you.
Right. So the maker of biodegradable golf balls is Danimer Scientific. No, I'm totally kidding. They don't do that. Stephen, how are you, sir?
No pressure. I'm good, Bob. How are you?
I've completely hijacked this completely. But if you wanted to, you could make biodegradable golf balls. I'm sure. Hey, welcome to the program. Great to have you along. I want to talk about this thing called plastic products that are biodegradable and compostable, because I know that they're scratching the surface of that technology. You guys seem to have wrangled that and are now the tip of the spear of that kind of good news. So talk about it.
So the way this works, we're reproducing something that occurs in nature every day. If you think about a tree and has leaves and a leaf falls to the ground, there's carbon in that leaf that's captured from the sun and the atmosphere. And it when it falls to the ground, there are bacteria in the soil that will consume it. And the way that works is they break the carbon down in that leaf and synthesize it into another form of carbon for their own metabolic purposes that allow them to reproduce and move around and do their thing. And so what we do is recreate that process that's been going on for millennia in nature. We recreate that in a fermentation.
So wait, so what you're talking about is composting, right? With your first your example.
Well, now that's technically it's biodegradation when the bacteria directly consumes the material. Composting you can be the beginning of biodegradation, but it usually requires heat and moisture to get the product to break down. But a purely biodegradable product is just consumed by bacteria. And that's how this works. So we feed vegetable oil to these bacteria in a fermentation vessel and allow them to get fat and happy.
Yeah.
And then we break that cell wall open and extract the carbon from inside the cell wall. And the beauty of this is that is the plastic resin. So we make an article out of it, and if it accidentally gets into nature, it will be consumed by bacteria.
So these are the products that Danimer makes, and let's talk about that, because you have a signature product called Nodax. Am I saying that correctly?
Nodax. Yeah, Nodax is the name for our PHA, polyhydroxyalkanoate. We take that PHA and we combine it with other degradable materials and inert materials found in nature, like calcium and things like that, and make them functional for use in actual applications. So I have a couple examples here. That's a Starbucks straw. Starbucks is using our straws in North America.
Mike had one of those behind his ear most of the 80s, if I'm not mistaken. Sorry. We'll edit.
Grab the yay.
We'll edit that out. Sorry. But so wait a second. So your big giant green Starbucks straws, that's you guys, huh?
That's us.
You know, do you know where we need you?
Everywhere.
SeaWorld.
Everywhere.
Right?
Where?
SeaWorld.
Oh yeah.
Yo, so we of course you may be watching us in New York City, folks. You might be listening to us in Baghdad, for God's sakes, on American Forces Radio. But San Diego, one of the big issues has been SeaWorld. The sea life, first of all. I'm not sure a great idea of putting, a whale into a swimming pool is great in the first place, but let's add insult to injury by giving them plastic straws with Slurpee residue in them.
Yeah.
And that's been an issue here. The word mandate comes up when I think about this, Stephen, because there are more and more municipalities and governments are demanding that we remove plastic from our universe, which I would argue is probably a good thing. That's got to help you guys, because per your example there with Starbucks, I think you have a Dunkin' Donuts, you're at Yankee Stadium, your Mercedes-Benz Stadium, so on and so forth. This has got to be just the tip of the spear, because those are corporations and municipal venues that want to be ahead of the curve. But there's going to be governments they're going to make companies do this, and I think that gives you a global footprint, does it not?
Yeah, that's happening right now. These bans, can be good, but they could also be bad, just depending on how well written they are. A lot of the bans will exclude any possible solution because people don't really understand yet that there are alternatives. So plastic serves a useful function, and it's helped humanity a lot, just being able to preserve food and things like that. I mean, think back 100 years ago, you couldn't carry a plastic chip bag around and have a snack.
Right.
Know?
True.
So there's a lot of things that we would rather not see a complete ban. We want to see them, leave room for compostable and degradable solutions like ours. I mean, as like paper straws, they're horrible.
They're horrible. That is the bane of human existence.
Yeah.
I swear.
The worst.
I'd rather get pulled over and get a ticket than have a paper straw. Except for the old days when they had the little remember those? That is universal sound for you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Remember those sippy straws?
Hey, exactly. Steven, how long is the biodegradable, the compostable process? Like if this thing gets
good question. Yeah. So it depends on the amount of bacteria that are present wherever that item ends up. The more bacteria there is to begin with, the faster the process will take place. If there's a small amount of bacteria, it just takes a little longer. But also it takes longer or shorter depending on the thickness or how big the item is. So Think about my example of a leaf falling to the ground.
Yeah.
That leaf is going to go away pretty quickly. But if that tree falls over, guess what? It's got the same carbon in it, but it's just going to take longer to go away.
Yeah. So in other words, it's going to take my cost a lot of years to decompose. I can tell you that. Because, you know, if it's a matter of if it's a thickness thing,
it's my facelift.
Stephen, will you come back on the air with us? This is fantastic. We need to spend more time with you.
Holy cow. You've
got to come on another day. Stephen Crosskrieg. Danimer Scientific, look at their stock symbol, DNMR. Go to Danimer.com. We're going to have him back in the weeks to come here. The future of plastics is here. Hey there, Big Biz continues. Great to have you along today. Costa, Sully, and the day trader Quattro. How do you like that?
Oh.
Brian, you're fine. We just had to find Brian.
I heard it.
Got to be looking. Can't be looking at your fingers, pal.
That was an unresolved resolve.
No. Can't be looking at your fingers, pal. Oh. You play with Dave Matthews, after all. Come on. No finger looking. You know, Brian Jordan's finger looking good.
Oh. Yes,
you heard it here first. Hey. Do you ever look at your hands when you play guitar? Do you really?
All the time, yeah.
See, here's the problem with me playing on stage. Wait.
Yeah.
Wait. Wait. No, wait. Do you want to do on stage?
Do it.
Here's what I do on stage.
Here we go.
It's called Mike. Brian, get ready to play. It's called the Ventrilla Solo. Really? Do a solo, right?
Oops. Play it with your teeth.
That's it. That's what I do. The Ventrilla Solo later.
I love it. I love it. That is the talent.
Yeah. You actually think my guitar's on? Ask any sound guy. I start every song and it's like whoop. Yeah, that's the key.
That's good stuff.
Great to have you along today. My good friend Lucas Haldeman, the CEO of SmartRent. They are a New York Stock Exchange market system company under the stock symbol SMRT. I actually think they're NYSE company, SMRT. And you can go to smartrent.com. Real estate accounts, as we've talked about with him, for 13%. Of the economy and GDP makes up 40% of greenhouse gases. Oof. Some apartment restrooms more than other, Michael Costa.
That's right.
But this is called, they're in a business called property technology. And now that our housing boom is officially over, Oof. The pendulum is swinging in the opposite direction. That means the owners and operators of big apartment complexes, housing developments, businesses, buildings, and the like, have got to kind of prepare for an overflow of inventory. Here to talk about that and more, our good friend Lucas Haldeman. Lucas, how are you, sir? Great to see you.
Hey, great to see you. Thanks for having me again.
Hey, I've got to ask you something because of all the news that came out in the last 2 weeks since you were on. There really is it's almost going to be a housing bust at some points. In fact, four major cities in the U.S. are going to see 25% precipitous drops in real estate values. We have to talk about that a little bit because that is a supply-demand problem in and of itself, which creates property technology front and center to kind of solve some of those problems for some of the big housing operators, whether they be apartment complexes, condos, and so on and so forth. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, for us, always the bust is a bigger catalyst for technology than the boom, and so we're seeing that. We're seeing it in single family resale and single family new home, that the markets have ground to a halt, and people realize we just can't keep doing the same thing the same way. On the multifamily side, we're seeing rents have certainly topped out. You know, we're seeing them no longer continue to grow, starting to soften. This is where you actually have to become a property manager again. You're not just going to rely on the escalating rents going up, going up, going up to save your business. You're going to have to think about, how do we optimize? How do we become more efficient? How do we do more with less staff? You know, the really good operators are already there. They've already moved into that because they know what's coming.
You know, what's interesting is now it becomes more, for the reasons you just mentioned, in my opinion, it becomes more critical that the smart home technology come into play, right? Because now every dollar counts again, where we were in sort of an era where we didn't have a magnifying glass on our P&L in the real estate business. Now we do, correct? So this is a big deal.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And now you're hearing some of the forward-thinking operators say, we've actually reduced labor by 40% by putting out our platform. When you're growing rents at 11, 12%, that kind of sounds nice, but you're not that invested in it. Now suddenly everyone's like, wait, what was that? I need to learn about that. And so it's a great catalyst for our business.
If most multifamily residences deployed technologies like yours, I'm going to let you explain your technology in just one second, that would create savings of 5, 10% across the board. Those are real numbers when you're talking about profit margins of 2% sometimes, right?
Yeah, and that's just the table stakes. I mean, we're seeing people double and triple that by really embracing the platform. So just putting in smart thermostats, just protecting your apartment from water damage and putting in leak sensors, that alone would give you ROI on the whole platform. When you start talking about reducing staff by 40%, becoming more efficient, taking your labor costs down by your maintenance costs down by 30% on your by one call job closing, it just stacks and stacks and stacks the ROI up. Yeah. And it's actually allowing some of our more sophisticated operators to keep buying. Even though cap rates have moved away from us, they know that they can get performance that others can't, and it allows them to continue to be buyers.
Our guest today, Lucas Haldeman, as you can see there on the screen, he is the CEO of SmartRent, SMRT. They are publicly traded. Talk about your technology, because it really does define smart home technology when you take a look at what you guys are up to there. So talk about what you guys have created, the proprietary element of it, and where it's going here for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, what we've done is we've harnessed all of this entire ecosystem of smart hardware and put it into one platform. Mm-hmm. And that's key, because our customers own a lot of homes. And so it's not where it's a hassle. Maybe in your house, you've got two or three apps to control your smart home. It's kind of a hassle. If you've got 65,000 or 75,000 apartment units, it ruins the savings for you. And so our platform, hardware agnostic, work with all the big brands of hardware out there that you know, consumer companies, bring it into one easy platform. Then that's also integrated with the software that apartment owners are using to manage their apartments already. So deeply integrated, makes it a very elegant system. Residents love it. They're able to get the smart home experience that homeowners have had for 20 years. But more importantly, owners love it because of that durable ROI and the ability to cut costs and save money. At the same time, they're raising rents and getting more of a premium. So I love that the platform says, hey, we're going to raise your income and decrease your expenses. That's what every business owner wants to do.
Hey, I agree. Lucas, real quickly, I got a 30-second question for you. What's the adoption rate been like when the housing boom's dropping, with some of the people you've been talking to over the last several months?
I mean, it's unbelievable, the demand pressure that we're getting. We're trying to grow as fast as we can to keep up with this demand.
Yeah, I love that. Lucas, get back and go to the Super Bowl. I know you're just down the street, pal. I know you. So we won't see you Monday. I'll see you Tuesday, though. Thanks, pal. Lucas Haldeman.
You know he's going.
Oh, of course, he's right there.
God.
SmartRent, SMRT, more Big Biz coming up. Stand by.